Fixed income markets have evolved, but most benchmarks haven't. At Janus Henderson, our forward-thinking framework aims to reconstruct past approaches to fixed income by focusing on multiple investor objectives. Learn more at janushenderson.com. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal and fluctuation of value.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, October 25th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Viral posts are important to Facebook's business, but the systems that promote content enabling it to go viral can also disproportionately amplify divisive content. Internal Facebook documents reviewed by The Wall Street Journal show that people inside the company have long discussed how to reduce the spread of viral content, including incendiary posts. But executives have recently opted for a more targeted approach by focusing on certain groups the platform deems harmful. On today's show, we'll discuss the latest installment of the Facebook files with reporter Justin Scheck. He's part of the investigative team. That's after these headlines. Starting with a separate Facebook files story. Internal research from the company reviewed by The Wall Street Journal shows in India, Facebook's largest market, its platforms are awash with inflammatory content. In the months following a series of religious protests there in December 2019, inflammatory posts spiked 300% at times, according to the documents. And users of Facebook and WhatsApp in the country told company researchers they received messages that encouraged hatred and violence. According to Facebook's researchers, two Hindu nationalist groups with ties to India's government post inflammatory anti-Muslim content. Both groups remain active on the platforms. Facebook spokesman Andy Stone declined to comment on the Hindu nationalist group's activities on Facebook. He said some of the reports referred to in the WSJ's story were working documents containing investigative leads for discussion, not complete investigations, and didn't contain individual policy recommendations. Privacy changes that Apple introduced to its App Store in April are posing a problem for the online ad market. The changes allow users to opt out of being tracked by apps like Facebook and Snapchat. That means those apps are getting less data on consumer habits and interests, and ads can't be targeted to users as effectively. WSJ reporter Patience Hagen says for companies buying ads, that means less bang for their buck.
For instance, Plum Deluxe, a company that sells loose leaf tea, they used to be able to find a new customer for every $27 they spent on Facebook and Instagram ads. Now, they're sometimes having to spend as much as $270 to acquire a new customer via the same ad methods. And so many e-commerce store owners have had a similar experience. For instance, they're having to spend a lot more to acquire a customer, or they're finding that their return on ad spend is a lot lower, so they bring in a lot less sales for every dollar spent on ads.
And it's already impacting the bottom line. Shares of Snap fell 20% last week after it predicted a slowdown in growth because of reduced ad revenue. Facebook, which reports its earnings after the bell today, is also expected to be impacted. And we're learning new details about how much Google charges for ads on its platform. According to a 2019 lawsuit that was unsealed last week, Google charges a 22 to 42% commission for ads on its platform. That's 2 to 4 times more than what rival companies charge. On top of that, the suit, which was filed by a group of state attorneys general, alleges that ads for Google's own products win 80% of the auctions for spots at the top of Google search results. Google has called the lawsuit flawed and says it collects lower fees for ads than the industry average. Okay, coming up, Facebook knows viral posts can spread divisive and dangerous content. Instead of reducing viral content in general, it's targeting certain groups. We'll discuss who they're targeting and the consequences after the break.
Avalara is known as a pioneer in sales tax automation. Since 2004, Avalara has been providing cloud-based sales tax solutions for businesses of all sizes. Avalara automatically integrates with more than 700 ERP and e-commerce systems, likely the systems you use today. Find out how your business can save time and reduce risk at avalara.com/WSJ. That's AVALARA.com/WSJ. Avalara, tax compliance done right.
Facebook is a place where viral posts can spread to millions. Viral content keeps people engaged and increases Facebook's ability to sell advertising. Some of it can be positive. Think about the ice bucket challenge, where people shared videos of themselves pouring cold water over their heads to raise money to fight ALS. But some of it can be dangerous, like the spread of misinformation about the coronavirus. According to internal documents reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, Facebook has struggled to deal with the potential consequences of viral posts. The content can engage more users, but it can also create social divisions. In the latest installment of the WSJ's investigative series, The Facebook Files, we learned that rather than reduce the possibility of posts going viral, the company opted to act against entire communities it deemed problematic. Joining us to discuss what this means and why Facebook chose this path is our reporter, Justin Scheck. Hi, Justin.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing well. So we saw in other Facebook file stories that Facebook had done internal research on the impact of its own platform. And I'm wondering if here it looked at how viral posts spread and what they do to users.
The company researchers looked in detail at what kind of content was going viral. And they found that really heavy users, and heavy users are, you know people who Facebook has tended to amplify, the content they share is disproportionately false and hyperpartisan. And the way one researcher put it was that these pages that share misinformation tend to post at a much higher rate than other pages with a similar audience size. So the people who tend to make things go viral tend to be doing things that are not good.
Can you tell us about a specific study they did?
So one study that was done internally that shows the consequences of problematic viral information was a document called Carol's Journey to QAnon. And what the researchers did was they created a Facebook account for a fictional 41-year-old woman named Carol Smith, who identified as a conservative mom from Wilmington, North Carolina, and she said her interests were, you know, young children, parenting, Christianity, civics, and community. So, you know, definitely like someone leaning toward the right, but firmly within the mainstream. And, you know, on the first day of this experiment, Facebook's, you know, automated recommendations gave her, like, you know, some funny memes and some generally conservative groups. But once she joined those, on the second day, Facebook recommended almost exclusively right-wing content. Some of it was leaning toward conspiracies. And by the fifth day, Facebook was steering her toward groups that were affiliated with QAnon. And as it went on, Facebook started recommending content that included claims of white genocide and a video promoting a banned hate group. And so what it showed was that even if you're essentially a passive Facebook user who identifies as a conservative and joins a couple of conservative groups, Facebook will automatically feed you incendiary, conspiracy-minded, potentially harmful stuff. One thing the researchers said, and we did not see this research, but they say that similar things happen toward people tilting leftward, that they did a similar experiment and found a similar thing, that people get polarized in the other direction too.
So how did Facebook decide to address this?
Well, the company at a high level decided they didn't want to take action overall across the platform to slow down the viral spread of information. So if they were going to have the viral spread of information and that was going to result in bad things going viral, they decided to take aim at the things that looked bad, take aim at groups that looked like they might be behind bad stuff rather than impose the same restrictions on everyone.
Are there some examples of the groups that they targeted?
Yeah, so the kind of headlining one is a group called the Patriot Party, which was this sort of loose agglomeration of people and groups who popped up after the Capitol riots. President Trump had called for a Patriot Party briefly, and there were a lot of people who kind of rallied behind that. And some of them were people who'd been affiliated with Stop the Steal and all these extremist movements. Some of them were just, you know, regular Trump supporter types who wanted to start their own parties. And Facebook became very worried that there was connective tissue between this group and some of the extremist groups that had been on the site and didn't want a repeat of the escalation to January 6th. So they made it almost impossible to find most Patriot Party content on Facebook. And the issue here isn't so much whether the Patriot Party is good or bad. It's that in the documents, Facebook acknowledges that while there's some connective tissue between some of the Patriot Party people and some other bad stuff that happened, overall, it's sort of, you know, what they call an authentic movement. It's an actual movement. It's not pretending to be something it's not. And rather than take action that would affect anyone using Facebook to, like, for example, slow down the viral spread of information, they singled out this group.
Can you explain to us a little bit why that is? Why go after one group rather than, say, change the entire system? Or why would they need to change the entire system?
So I think the important thing about the story, the most important thing, isn't so much that they targeted one group or that they target individual groups. It's that they have a choice. The choice was to take measures that would reduce virality overall. And some employees, including some very high-ranking employees, wanted to do this. And that would be things like, one suggestion was kill the reshare button to make it so you can't just reshare everything. There were other more subtle things that would limit the amount of resharing, limit the spread of information. The concern is if you do that across the platform, it might reduce engagement. So instead, they took the strategy of looking for individual groups that seem problematic and picking them off.
Does Facebook need to have viral content?
That's such a good question. And that's, you know, I feel like that's an essential question for Facebook. And I think they're still struggling with that. You know, the ability of something to go viral was something that the company, I think, so deeply held as a core belief that it was good. And that's something that Zuckerberg has talked about with the Ice Bucket Challenge. Like, it shows how they can take something good and spread it all over the world really quickly. So now, over the last 5 years, when they see that actually it can be used to do things that are really corrosive, and that they've got, you know, people within the company saying we need to dial back on this, they need to ask the question, you know, is virality something that we need?
How has Facebook responded to this story?
Well, you know, we've been in dialogue with them on this story and many others for a while, and you know, I think their responses were, I think, pretty thoughtful. You know, what they told us was, you know, what a spokesman said kind of broadly was that, you know, they've been trying to find solutions to combating these, like, dangerous viral social movements. And they sort of acknowledged its attention there. And they said, you know, to find the solutions, they've invented new technologies. They balance difficult trade-offs that they say society has struggled with for a long time. You know, so they frame this as something that it's not a Facebook problem. It's a society problem. And obviously, they say they want more guidance from government. You know, they're still calling for more regulation, which they haven't for a while. And their head of security policy, Nathaniel Gleicher, spoke to us about it. And what he said was that, yeah, you know, Facebook will take action against movements on Facebook, but only if there's compelling evidence of the product of, like, what he said, like, tightly knit circles connected to real world harm and committed to violating Facebook rules. The big question is, you know, how do you define that? But the way he put it was, you know, when you start to think about authentic people organizing on the platform, contributing to harm, you have to be very careful. And it's easy to get into a place where you're picking and choosing, and that isn't fair. So the company is not denying that they do this. And they're not denying that it's difficult and there's the potential for it to look unfair and that there's the potential for it to look like they're picking and choosing or you know, putting their finger on the scales, the way we put it. But they're also not really, you know, getting into the other question about why not just choose to reduce virality.
That was our reporter, Justin Scheck. Thanks for joining us, Justin.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. But before we go, today's story was part of the Wall Street Journal's in-depth investigation into Facebook. And while there are still more stories to come, we're opening up our phone lines to hear from you. What questions do you have about the investigation, the future of Facebook, or combating its effect in your own life? We'll have a member of the Facebook Files investigative team on the show to answer those questions. Leave us a voicemail at 314-635-0388. We might include your question or story in an upcoming episode. Again, you can reach us at 314-635-0388. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
20 years ago, energy giant Enron was considered one of the most innovative companies in the world. But in late summer 2001, the company's top executive resigned out of the blue. That set my colleague Rebecca Smith and me on a reporting journey with an end we never imagined. I'm John M. Schweiler from The Wall Street Journal. On our new podcast, Bad Bets, we unravel big business dramas that have had a big impact on our world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.